welcome to the Monday Mild podcast. Today's guest is a meteorologist. She's a scientist, a broadcaster, author, and the resident weather forecaster on Good Morning Britain. Known for her energy and brilliance in studio. In the words of Ben Shepherd, she's the most passionate, talented, and informed broadcaster I work with. Laura Tobin, welcome to the Monday Mile podcast.
I feel like you just read my obituary. Like, I sound amazing.
Like, you got it all going on.
Thanks, Ben Shepherd. I'll pay you later.
So what we do in the studio, just go around paying each other off. I asked for the forecast, and you have delivered it. It's dry.
Yes, it's dry. There was some sun. I just saw like one flake of snow.
You're joking.
Yeah, it just came past. I'm really excited.
More, please. No way. Yeah. Are we going to have a white winter here in the UK?
No. Very unlikely. Really? We're just on this knife edge. We're on this knife edge of the cold just being in the north in the Arctic, but the warm that we've had, the warm, the wind, the rain, that's what's been winning out, like, basically for the whole of winter so far. And actually, it feels like winters aren't how they used to be. This, you know, we're wrapped up warm today. We don't very often get really, really wrapped up to go outside in that cold British fresh air.
I feel like as Brits, as a nation, we've almost forgotten how to dress for winter. Mm-hmm. I've got
they say
two
there's
layers.
Never bad weather, just the wrong clothes.
It's so true. When I messaged you about the weather for today, you told me that there's particular language that you as forecasters use to say whether it's good or bad. That's not a thing.
No,
right?
You went, good news, there's good weather on. See the snow. You see the flakes of snow?
This is the first time it's ever snowed on the mile.
I just saw some flakes.
Did you bring your snowboard with
you? I'm excited. No, I've got a little sledge. You can pull me.
Okay, there we go. Sorted.
Yeah, so you said good news. It's good weather on Monday. We don't say good or bad in weather. Because we might say it's going to be good news. It's going to be hot and sunny. Not everyone likes hot and sunny weather. You might say good news. It's going to be a dry day. Farmers might need rainfall. Or good news, you know, finally we're going to see some wet weather after it's been dry, but people might have outdoor plans or barbecues. So we try not to say good or bad.
Okay, that makes sense.
We just say the facts. But actually, if you have weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of rain, and finally, you know, the summer holidays, it was really wet summer holidays, people wanted to go outdoors and have outdoor plans, I would say after weeks of rain, finally this weekend, and the bearer of good news, because I feel like it's good news for most, there's going to be some dry weather on the way.
So it's tactical.
Yeah.
The wording is tactical. For me, warm weather is a win.
Is it?
It is majorly.
Hang on, can I just point out, you were snowboarding, it's cold, there's snow,
but
that's not warm.
But I've spent over 13 years in the cold. So the warmth is a welcomed break. Now, here in the UK, I think we are known and sort of renowned for being obsessed with the weather. It's a topic of everyday conversation. Growing up as a kid, did you know you always wanted to chat more about the weather than the average Brit?
Yeah, you know, I think there's this crazy stat that I think that one in every 10 people is always talking about the weather in the UK. Yeah. I think every single day we talk about the weather for about half an hour, and it's our go-to topic of conversation. And I think it's because of where we live that our weather is so changeable. That is why we talk about it so much. And that is how I fell in love with weather. So, like, I'm a scientist and a geek, and I feel like geeks are cool. But for me, we had a science teacher, Mr. Hannant, when I did geography at school at the age of 14. And he said, right, I want to teach you about the jet stream, but I want it to be a really visual way.
Okay.
So he lined the girls up in a row, the boys up in a row. And he said, run across the classroom.
Yeah.
As quick as you can. Bump into each other.
Bit
so you have us when you get to the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other side, we were all in a wiggly line. And he said, that is how the jet stream works. It's the cold air pushing down from the north, the warm air moving up from the south, and where the two hit is the battleground. And depending on whether the jet stream is above us, we're warm. If it's underneath us, we're cold. And if we slowly get it over our heads, then we end up having it rain. So if we are underneath the jet stream, we have rain. And I just think at that stage, at 14, I was like, bing.
I want to know
I
more.
I realised it. So that day I phoned the Met Office, like that day, like, how do I become a weather forecaster?
At the age of 14.
Yeah, and I had to do A-level maths and physics. And that's what I did.
Were you cool with that, maths and physics?
No, like maths I loved.
Yeah.
Physics for a 14-year-old girl, I generally think is not the best news you're ever going to hear.
No.
And actually my first year of physics A-level, I failed. Because it was just really difficult.
You know what? That's actually good for people to know.
Because, do you think?
Yeah, honestly, because sometimes when
you
go to approach something, you're like, I can't do it, I can't do it. But to hear that you've got to where you've got to, and you didn't pass it first
no,
time.
No, it was like, it was an N, nearly.
If not at even first you don't succeed, try and try again.
So I had to have all these extra lessons in the summer.
When you say fail, sorry, what is
so
a fail?
Whatever A-level physics, it wasn't A, B, C, D or E or F, it
right,
was
okay.
N, which is nearly, and U is ungraded.
I get what you mean. Yeah, that's...
Probably failed it. But then I had all these lessons over the summer, then I managed to pass it the next year, and then I got my A-levels, I went to university, did physics and meteorology at Reading. So half my degree was physics and half was meteorology. And I ended up falling in love with physics. So it worked out really well. Actually, I met my husband at university. So that worked out really well as well.
That's an absolute win.
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably a good place to meet a husband is in a physics class. Because
well, there were 70 boys and 5 girls.
Exactly. So the odds are so strong.
Was high.
Maybe I'm going to start physics. I did always want to be a weather woman. So
I know. I love this.
Maybe,
I love this.
Maybe this is my calling.
So any reason you're talking to me so you can find out how to have my job?
Pretty much, exactly. No, in all honesty, I'm actually fascinated by the meteorology behind your job, because
yeah.
I don't know anything about that, and I've spent years and years in extreme climates.
But you've lived and breathed weather, you know it.
That's the crazy thing with my job. I've sort of ended up exposing myself to so many climates and weather, and it's been a huge part of our conversation. You go on the mountain and all you're doing is looking at the forecast for the week. Is
yeah.
it going to be sunny? Are we going to be able to ride?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be windy? Oh no, it's too windy to hit the jump. So I've sort of, yeah, lived and breathed it, which is cool, which makes this so much more interesting for me and hopefully our listeners. We are currently walking towards a river.
Yes.
Where are we for our listeners?
We were in Richmond. I'm not entirely sure where we are now, but we're walking past some of the most beautiful houses. So cherry blossom is out. Cherry blossoms are out because the trees are so freaked out. It's not spring, but spring in nature is already starting to come and show its hand. How crazy is that?
Why is that?
Because it's just been so mild. So you need a temperature of 5 degrees for your grass to grow.
Okay.
And in the winter time, the grass doesn't grow. The temperature's not above 5 degrees. It becomes dormant. And it's the same for kind of the rest of nature, all of the blossoms that grow, all of the daffodils that grow. But we're starting to see everything getting warmer. So we've hardly had any frost this winter. So the warmer it is, the more things grow. And then it freaks out and then it means that we'll probably have like a second spring. Things will flower, then they'll die because it gets cold, and then they'll have to spring again.
That is not a good place
to be. We need frost in the UK. It's really good for lots of our vegetables, like sprouts. We need that big frost to kill all the bugs and all the germs so that then the season can start again. So in a world where we talk about climate change, there are winners and losers. Some vegetables thrive off it. Some aren't so good. It's good for bumper crops of apples, but other years it's not. So yeah, it's kind of complicated.
One thing you do extremely well in your job is actually making the forecast relatable. And a big, big part of how I've seen you explain things to us with regards to climate change. We've just walked down to the river here in Richmond. Why is it so high?
It is high, it is fast. So I was up the River Thames earlier, just yesterday actually. There they had, in Marlow, they are 6 centimetres shy of their all-time highest record level of the river. And actually a little further up in Reading, they broke their record. Between Reading and Oxford, loads of places broke their record. And it's because we've had so much rainfall this winter. So November, December, and the first week in January, we had colossal amounts of rain. In fact, the first week in January, just in the first 5 days, loads of parts of southern England had half their rainfall in just 4 days. So it's a huge amount of rain in a really short space of time. It floods down all the catchments. It just means that the rivers can't respond so quickly, and then they rise and you get this.
And is that concerning? Are we likely to see more of that weather pattern?
Yeah, everything is happening more. So Earth is warmer, a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. The fact is, for every 1 degree of warming, the atmosphere holds 7% more moisture. So every time it rains, it is already wetter because of climate change. And the warmer atmosphere makes more storms, bigger storms, so more rain.
Not the one.
No.
This is not the one. I want to tap into this a little bit more in a bit. But first of all, I want to go back to your career as a weather forecaster. You do extremely early mornings, 4 a.m. starts.
4 a.m. every day, Monday to Friday.
How do you do it? How do you stay motivated and inspired to keep delivering the weather in such a bubbly fashion?
Do you know, like sugar. I love sugar. Sugar is my go-to thing every day. I know it's really bad. I don't drink tea or coffee.
Definitely just had like a cinnamon bun before we started walking, didn't you?
It's like sweet treat. Sugar is my pick-me-up and I think that's probably a bad thing, but it's just I have it in the morning, gives me a lift. But yeah, so alarm set for 4 a.m. every morning, leave the house at 4:15, get to work just before 5 a.m, get changed, go into hair and makeup. I'm in the studio at 4:45 and then we're on air from 6 till 9. Then we'll have a debrief. I might chat to Debbie in wardrobe about clothes, what we're going to wear, things we've got coming up. I'll talk to producers about weather lives coming up. I'm talking to work about there's these climate change stats that are coming out. We're going to talk about that. We've got other OBs we want to do, other projects. So there's always something going on. Then I might have another job to go to, or I'm an assistant beaver leader in my daughter's beavers group. So I've got lots of beaver things to plan this week. I'm running the session. So I'm always busy doing something. I might get a nap in.
Yeah.
If I come home and I don't have anything to do, I literally skip upstairs and have a nap. It makes me so happy. And I pick up my daughter from school at 3 and it's just go, go, go. Clubs, dinner, games.
Do you think waking up at that time in the morning does have a shelf life to it? Because not many people manage to sustain it for a prolonged period of time.
It's been 11 and a half years and it's definitely getting harder. But also, you know, I try and cram loads in. You know, essentially my day is just early, then I like to do stuff for the rest of the day. But I feel like I'm a full-time worker, but I'm also a nearly full-time mum. My husband takes my daughter to school every day and I pick her up every day. And I feel like I'm around and I feel like I'm present. I think it's really hard for mums who work full-time, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. They might not be able to do the drop-offs. They probably can't do the pickups. And they feel like they're really unpresent and everyone has this mum guilt. So the thing that I do is basically have very little sleep. But it means that I feel like I can do my job well. I can be around and be a good wife. I can be around and be a good mum. But the thing I don't get is sleep. But you know, like I've never needed much sleep. So it's fine. I just go, 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 go.
Such a positive way of looking at it. So you don't really get that mum guilt as such.
I mean, I do have mum guilt if I'm away for a few days, if I have to like travel with work. But you know, sometimes like, last summer I had to go to the Isle of Wight and the crew were going to be going, we had to overnight. So I ended up putting my daughter to bed, getting down to Portsmouth at really late, getting a meeting the crew at 11 o'clock at night. We did our live and I got back and a picture from school. She never knew that I'd gone.
No way. Often
I'll say to my husband, we'll put her to bed, don't tell her I'm leaving. And I just end up getting to location late so that I can be there for her. That's my choice and then it works for me. But sometimes you do get it, you know, if you're really busy and there's loads of work to do and there's a big climate report or loads of severe weather and I'm having to do emails in the afternoon. I'm maybe watching her at ballet and she's like, mummy, watch me. And you're like, yeah, darling, I'm watching. And she's like, mummy, put your phone down. You know, it's not nice when they have that and you try and be as present as possible. You think you haven't picked up your phone, but suddenly you have, you're making a work phone call and they need you because they're doing something amazing. It's a juggle, it's a real, but also I genuinely feel like I have the best job in the world. You know, it's just me and the lovely Carol Kirkwood on The Beeb, who are the breakfast weather presenters in the UK. It's such an incredible job and I literally, literally love it. So I just think I can't take it for granted. I have to kind of work hard in both arenas.
That is so, so cool. I'm so inspired. I love it. You're literally juggling everything, but smashing everything all at the same time.
Sometimes I feel like I let some of those plates smash occasionally.
That's okay though. We all smash plates.
Yeah.
What sweets are you smashing in the morning though? I've heard a birdie told me that
this is Benjamin Shepherd by
that, that you've got like jars and jars of sweets. Yeah. What are you eating? Let me in on the secret. I need some of this good stuff.
I'm more of a sweet fiend than a chocolate fiend.
Yeah.
I love sour. So my very favourite sweets are the purple and blue cola bottles that taste like bubble gum.
Okay.
They're my best. Sour Haribos. I like the mice, the white chocolate mice. I like the fish and chips. I like shrimps. I like the sherbet laces. I also like,
it sounds like you're
licorice filled with sherbet. There's these licorice sticks filled with sherbet.
With the what, is that the white?
Yes.
Yeah, I like those as well. Yeah, definitely.
So now I do have a big sweet jar in my room. It's been going down quicker than I've been eating it.
Is that Ben Shepherd?
Yeah.
Dobbed in on the podcast. Ben's been stealing the sweets.
I have to say to him at the end of like the show, Ben, do you want a bit of sugar? He's like, of course I want some sugar. I'm like, come to my room. And I actually give him sugar.
How do you
physical sugar
balance out your diet though with those crazy early mornings? I've heard you speak about food waste in your book. Is that an inspiration to prepping food as well?
Do you know, food is massive for everybody in the whole way that we run our lives, especially when you're really busy trying to plan. First of all, the biggest thing when I first started doing early is I'd have breakfast at 5, and then when the day team used to come in at 9, I'd have more breakfast and then lunch and dinner. So I put on like half a stone in like a couple of months because I was eating way too much food. So actually, regardless of the hours you keep, and when you're a shift worker, you love talking about food and sleep, I still try and have my breakfast at breakfast time. I have my sweets, obviously, but I don't have breakfast until the show is finished and I have lunch and dinner. So okay. I just still stick to my 3 meals a day. It wasn't until I started researching for my book just about 2 years ago, it wasn't even my site, the research, I didn't realise how terrible food waste is. You know, we talk about emissions, it's emissions that make the temperature rise, it brings more severe weather. So food waste is 10% of the world's emissions. Flying is 2.5%. So that's, 4 times everyone's flying is food waste.
That's crazy. And that can be as simple as throwing eggshells in a normal bin.
Yeah, and most of the food waste, people might think it's supermarkets and restaurants, 70% of the food waste is our home food waste. You know, food costs money. We're in this cost of living crisis. So actually, if you don't throw food away, you will save yourself money. Loads of people think tackling climate change is going to cost me loads of money. Well, actually, food is one of the easiest things that you can do, the quickest things you can do. And if you plan your meals and plan ahead, it means that you won't throw away food. Apparently, on average, the UK household throws away 6 meals worth of food a week, which then costs money. If you think about it, you don't have to think about, I don't really care why people make changes or decisions, but yes, it will lower emissions, but it will save you money. And we talk about how red meat is really bad for the environment. Cows fart methane, which is 30 times more warming than carbon dioxide. It's one of the worst things you could eat. I don't eat red meat because of that now. To be fair, I eat chicken and fish because I love them and I haven't found good alternatives. Some people will say, you shouldn't eat any meat at all. Well, do you know, it's little changes that I kind of keep making slowly but surely. And I will transition to being vegetarian. We have vegetarian days, we have some vegan days.
But
it's just slowly transitioning.
What do you think about these processed vegetarian foods? Because there's a lot of people that are vegan or vegetarian.
Yeah.
And they're eating foods out of a plastic packet that have been highly processed. Surely that doesn't contribute.
This is the thing, it can be a minefield because then you go, there's plastic there, there's avocados that are floating from the other side of the world. And you have to just do one thing at a time. But you know, red meat is massive. Cutting down on that is good for your health, for cardiovascular. The NHS have said it will cost them, save them millions of pounds every year because of the poor health people have. More vegetables in your diet means you're healthier. Vegetables are cheaper than meat, so again, that saves you money. But you have to buy seasonal and local. Carrot sales, pea sales, and another British veg I've forgotten. They've gone down massively because they're just a bit boring because they're just found really easy
potatoes,
in the UK.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe potatoes. Yeah. But actually, if you buy locally, and if you can, and definitely buy seasonally, it's going to taste better. And then you look forward to when that food can come in. I was talking to one of my bosses, and she said that they went on holiday, I think it was somewhere in Italy, and they wanted a certain, they were like, oh, remember we came on holiday last time, we had peaches, and they went, they're not in season, won't be back for a couple of months. And you go, okay, I like that. They're not gonna ship them in from the other side of the world. You have them when they're in season, when they're tastier, and it's more affordable. So, you know, my daughter doesn't have berries all year round, and the 6-year-olds love berries all year round. We wait till they're in season, and wait till they're from the UK.
And,
then we have them, and she just loves them, and they're so much tastier, so much juicier. So yeah, I just think food waste, plan your meals, leftovers, freeze them. I've been making loads of soup lately. I made a turkey curry the other day from leftovers.
Amazing.
Christmas. So, you know, there are loads of ways that you can save money and just be more streamlined with it.
So if you were to give 3 pieces of advice for people to start making that change, what would that be?
Definitely plan your meals so that you don't overbuy.
Okay.
Whatever you have left over, freeze or turn it into something else. And if you could have one meat-free day a week, just one, it would be the equivalent of taking 18 million cars off the road in the UK every single year.
Give me an example of one that you do.
So I'm not good enough to actually have really good vegetarian or vegan options. I just would have a curry that just didn't have meat in it.
Perfect.
So just a veggie curry.
Yeah, nice.
But I just, you know, a stir fry just with loads of lovely fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
Not the prawns that I would have normally
had. I'm all over that already. I'm what I would call a fussitarian, which I've now reframed to chickitarian. I primarily eat chicken with a bit of fish. But
that's
at the
me,
same
that's
time,
me too, then, yeah.
I pound vegetables. I love veg. So I could have like 2 or 3 days in a week where I just eat so much veg.
Yeah.
Broccoli like it's going out of fashion.
Love it. Broccoli still in soup was my go-to making this year. And also, like, we have these veg boxes delivered.
Oh, yeah.
And they're a bit more expensive than if you buy them from your local supermarket. But there are so many vegetables in there, like, I've literally never had before. They give you these recipes, and I'm like, what is this? A pak choi? How do we cook this? This is great. My daughter loves opening it, and we have this real link now with the vegetables. We had an allotment, so she learned how to plant vegetables, how to grow them, where they come from. The value of knowing where your food comes from, where food comes from.
That's huge, isn't it?
It's so massive. And actually, you know when you go, oh, there's that cheese left, and it's got a bit mouldy, or that ham left, or that carrot, or those onions, or the potatoes in the bottom of your drawer, you throw them away. When you grow them yourself and you love them, you're never going to throw away any tiny onion or any little tiny carrot. No, you would never do that.
Straight in the soup, right?
Yes, exactly. But there's loads and loads of crazy stats about how much food we waste. I think it's like something like 24 million slices of toast every day, 7 million bananas, 10 million potatoes. Every day we just throw away. So those really common things, the milk, the potatoes, the bread, the bananas, they're the things that you can freeze or buy less of. And you know, so one of the things you can do, I learned this, and I do it every time I go to the supermarket, buy those little single bananas.
Now,
people
will
have a pack of five
and they want four
and they break them off. And everybody looks at those little bananas thinking there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that are most likely to get thrown away at supermarkets. So I always get the little single bananas.
Simple, simple things.
I say to people next to me as well, take the single ones. Charlotte will say, take the single
ones. They need a home.
Nothing wrong with them.
As a meteorologist, a big part of your job is studying weather patterns globally.
Yeah.
As well as climate change. Seeing that every day, digesting that information, do you feel more affected by the current global crisis?
Yes.
And how do you stay positive? It's really scary.
Yeah, two really good questions. The thing is, you have to realize it's reality. And I think that when I first started as a weather forecaster, it was weather forecasting that I wanted to do, that I loved. Progressively, it's going, gosh, there's some severe weather there, some severe weather there. And then I realizing, like, you know, 10 years ago when I was at Good Morning Britain, going, there's a severe weather story, can we cover it? And then going, yeah, this is great, let's get some pictures. And then now it's happening more and more often. It got to a stage about 5 years ago, I was going, there's a record-breaking rainfall here, or there's record-breaking temperatures there. And they'd be like, oh, another record is a bit boring, let's pick and choose the ones we show. And at that point, I suddenly thought, yes, they're becoming so common, it's almost not newsworthy. And you have to pick the best ones, because otherwise people don't engage with it enough. And I know that's really bad. You have to choose the best, worst weather. Otherwise, it just becomes so, it happens so often.
Right.
But the fact that there's more records more often is exactly the fact that climate change is getting worse. And you have to think about, you know, lots of the big severe weathers used to happen like really far away in countries that we not as associated with in the UK, not America, not Europe. Well, now they're happening closer to home. You know, we had the Greek wildfires, the torrential flooding through Europe, the flooding that hit Libya. We had the wildfires in Canada that's turned the New York skyline orange. They had the worst air pollution in the world. And you look at all of those things happening closer and closer, and you suddenly go, oh, F, this isn't good.
No.
And I just think, I have a daughter who's six, and I've been to the climate conferences. I wrote the book because I wanted to feel like I could make a difference. If I talk about the weather on Good Morning Britain, talk about climate change, talk about how severe it is, highlight that it's happening. I've done some shows where I talk about solutions. I've written a book that shows people how they can make a difference and solutions. I feel like I'm doing everything I can, but I want to do more. But I look at her and I'm like, I want to have hope that we can make a difference. Because if I don't have hope that it's possible, then what's the point?
Do you have concern for your daughter, for the future?
Yeah, I really do. I remember her birthday a few years ago. She was one or two, and it was the day that the UK had its hottest day ever recorded, and we got to 38.7 degrees Celsius. We were going to go to the zoo. We couldn't. We just sat in the garden in a paddling pool in the shade, me just applying a million layers of sun cream to her. And the reality is that that summer would become a normal summer for her by the time that she's my age. And that was terrifying. And I just thought, I can't let her live in that world where she can't actually physically go out and enjoy life. And I went to Svalbard a few years ago. It's a little island between Norway and the North Pole. The other day she went, remember when you went to the North Pole, Mummy? Did you see Father Christmas? I was like, wasn't actually the North Pole, nearly the North Pole though. But you know, the landscape is changing there massively. They're losing their glaciers, polar bears are dying, reindeer are dying. And I've stood there and realised that if we keep warming as we are, if she visited when she was my age, there could be no polar bear, no reindeer, no glaciers. And I want her to see the world as amazing as it is now and for it not to keep changing as rapidly as it is. So change is coming. We're slowly making progress. But the recent COP that we had, COP28 in Dubai, there was nowhere near as much progress as we wanted.
For starters, the fact it's being held in Dubai is concerning.
Yeah, being held in Dubai, the COP president is an oil giant. Apparently there were lots of negotiations happening behind the scenes, the discussions about new oil fields and coal fields around the world, which is really, really bad news. You know, we have the sun today and the wind a little bit. There is enough sun and wind on our planet to power us all completely for free in a way that is green. And yes, it costs for the infrastructure, but once it's in, it is there and it is all free. So, you know, there are people behind the scenes who are making great strides in renewable energy. And actually, people talk about China, like they go, what about China? China have put more renewables in the last year than any other country. They are upscaling massively. So I just think each country has to do what they can do rather than finger pointing to what everyone else can do. And the UK, we were the first to start polluting. We should lead the way. And once we start, others will follow. And then it's all these little people at the bottom who are making great changes, but need to upscale their businesses that can do like bigger and bigger things. So I feel like we're on the cusp of great things happening, just not happening quick enough.
Does it concern you that so many people go, well, I can't make a difference? Everyone thinks of themselves as a unit of one, or a household of four, or six. A lot of people just go, well, what can I do about it? There's power in numbers.
Yes, my motto is no one can do everything, but everyone can do something. And I saw a little cartoon a while ago when I was writing my book, and it was two people walking along, and one person had a plastic bottle and they threw it behind them. And then the other guy went, mate, that's not cool. What'd you throw that away for? And he went, it's just one plastic bottle. And then there was a speech bubble from God saying, says 8 billion people.
But even if we were to stop now and look here, there's a tissue, another bit of tissue. There's a lid. This is actually not too bad for the River Thames.
We litter pick on the way home and there's always loads of rubbish. I know what you mean. Every little thing that everybody can do makes a difference.
Okay.
Because it means that you learn more and you care more. Honestly, when I first started writing my book, I thought I was pretty green, quite eco. And I was freaking out. Like, oh my goodness, I didn't compost my food waste. Once you finished, that was my other one. With food, whatever you have left over, the banana skins, the eggshells, the potato peelings, compost it. Because rather than going into the bins and making methane, it can go into compost and it can help to give new life back to Earth. I was just going, we have so much plastic in our bathroom. We don't do this. We don't do that. Let's turn off more things. Let's buy less. Let's fix all of our clothes. You try and do everything, it makes you crazy. But you just do one thing at a time and everything you do, you appreciate. So like my daughter, when it's her birthday, or Christmas, we think about what she actually really needs and wants rather than overbuying and getting her way too much stuff and buying new. So when she had her bike, we bought that from Facebook Marketplace. She has a Barbie Dream House, we bought that from Facebook Marketplace. The same with a little princess house. Barbie Dream Houses are like £250. It's disgusting that parents need to pay that money to buy something that their child wants. So instead it would cost us 30 quid. And I said to her, another little girl had this. It's got a little few cracks on it, a couple of bits missing. I said, but it's pre-loved and you can now give it love. And she said, oh, mummy, when I finish with it, I can give it to somebody and they will love it too. She now has an understanding of the value of objects. And, you know, we just don't need everything that we have. And it makes you think, I'll buy less. And the things I buy, I'll buy that are nicer quality and maybe spend a little bit more money, but they will most likely last for longer and you'll value them more. When you start on this journey, you realize that you might save money, you will lower like your energy bills. For every 1 degree you lower your thermostat, you save 10% on your bills. You can be healthier with the way that you change your food. So there's just so many positives to saving the planet, you know, by making these changes.
One thing I think is crazy is the move towards electric cars, but often you could be more sustainable by running the car you've currently got into the ground rather than just buying something new.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. A long time ago, when someone asked Boris Johnson we could just tackle climate change, he said something about buying a new kettle and making sure it was energy efficient. Worst advice ever.
There would be so many kettles in the bin.
You don't throw something away that works. We had an old diesel car that was coming to an end.
As long as you don't live in the US.
drove it right until it kept breaking down and we're like, we can't have this anymore.
Yeah.
And then we got an electric car. You should only buy something new when your first thing doesn't work anymore. Our Hoover stopped working. My husband phoned the helpline. The lady helped him with this YouTube video. He managed to fix it. We've got another couple of years out of it. You can go take your like toasters, your kettles, your lamps to lots of tech places around the country and they will help to skill you so that you can fix that product so it has a new lease of life. In the same with clothes, if you have holes in your clothes, if you had problems with your shoes, get them rehealed. There are lots of little things that you can do to give everything longer life and you just appreciate it a bit more.
Boom. I think a lot of it is educational.
Yeah.
So many people are so unaware. Mm. Like for me, initially, before I'd heard the fact about cars, I'm thinking, oh yeah, well maybe I'll get an electric car. Or you could just stick with what you got, keep running it and not throw something else to the landfill side.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the kind of crazy visual destruction, essentially, we've seen on the planet. Being a former professional snowboarder, I've spent 13 years riding the same glacier pre-season. Glacial retreat is really, really scary.
Have you seen it?
I've seen a glacier shrink, I've seen a glacier close, and I've been riding and physically seen cracks of ice break off in front of my own eyes.
Wow.
Where does the future of our winters lie?
It lies in the changes we make now. We can be a little bit screwed, we can be really screwed, depending on how much of a change we make. So when I went to the Arctic, I actually phoned before I went some glacier experts from the Met Office, speaking to them about what happens if we make a change and what does the future hold. And they said, if we can limit our warming, say right now, we stopped all of our warming,
yeah.
No more warming, everything is zero, then the temperature stays right, and then no more emissions go into the atmosphere, we would still be committed with the warmth in the atmosphere, the warmth in the oceans, to seeing glaciers melt, ice melt, and having a sea level rise. I think it's around about 5 meters. And I said to him, why are people gonna care? Why are they gonna make a difference? Why would people wanna change anything? Because if we keep warming as we're projected to, the sea levels would rise by 25 meters. So every change we make now makes the future less shit. That's the projections over like thousands of years. So every change we make now means that the D-Day that we could have, it moves it 10 years in the future, or 50 years in the future, or 100 years in the future. It means it will never happen. So we have these tipping points we're worried about. We're worried about glaciers disappearing completely. Current projections say that all glaciers across Europe could be gone by 2100. But if we start to make changes, that's with 3 degrees of warming, we want to limit our warming to 1.5 degrees. And if we can stabilize at 1.5, then we'll keep the glaciers in Europe for generations and generations and generations, and they'll be there.
Tell us about the facts you were telling me with regards to the Winter Olympics.
Oh, yeah. So I have done the weather from, we have an international weather summit where weather presenters get together from across Europe. We talk about weather and climate. We go to glacier resorts. I've spoken to glacier experts about the reductions of glaciers, about how the ski seasons are shrinking. They're having to come up with new types of tourism in those seasons, the beginning and end of the seasons, to make ends meet. And we went to Innsbruck, where they held the Winter Olympics, where Eddie the Eagle Edwards famously did his big ski jump, and there's no snow there. Now, projections are that of all the countries that have hosted the Winter Olympics, only one could viably host it in a future world by 2080 because of climate change. It will be so warm, there will not be snow to host the Winter Olympics.
That is so crazy. And that's even with making the snow.
Yes, even with making snow.
Because out of the two Olympics I went to, all of the snow, or primarily the majority of it, was man-made.
Yes. And that is the future, to reliably host Winter Olympics, to have man-made snow, which obviously as a snowboarder, you'll know is something that doesn't ride as well.
I love that you used the word ride.
Like, yes, okay. Snowboard as well. But it will then be too warm even for the snow to settle at the altitudes they're going to be at. So all the infrastructure that's in place, all those normal ski resorts, glacier resorts, everything will have to go higher and higher and higher. We're already hearing that lower level ski resorts are having to turn into mountain biking resorts because that is the only thing that they can do. They have the beautiful scenery and the land, but they just don't have the snow anymore.
It's actually just really, really scary. I feel privileged that we have been able to experience winter But with these extreme climates, looking at last season, I was in Kitzbühel last year, mid-January, and there were literally green fields.
Wow.
Throw it to this year, and there's tons of snow.
Yeah.
It just seems so unstable. Is that a big part of it?
Yeah, so you get seasons, years when you have nothing, and you get years when you have loads. And actually, this winter, my weather summit was in Austria, and we were all together, and it had just been the snowiest start to winter, I think, for a decade. And they were actually thinking, oh my goodness, finally, we actually have snow. This is so exciting. But the trend, when you plot it every year, is going up. And actually, that's what we talk about in climate change. It's not just one year, one week, one day. It's the trend over like 10 years when you see actually the true reality of what's happening. So yes, right now it's cold. I will have some people messaging me going, oh, you harp on about climate change, but it's really cold and snowy this week. What are you talking about? It's winter and we will get cold winters, but the trend is that they're getting warmer and warmer, not just in the UK, around Europe. So some years we'll have amazing snow, but it will become more and more rare.
Being in the public eye with your job, you obviously do travel a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you get scrutinised for that? And how do you balance it?
The thing is, people will say, and Twitter's a mean place, you said don't travel, you said don't fly. I've never said don't travel, I've never said don't fly. I'm never going to tell people what to do. I would say, if you can, travel less. You know, we are in London. It's one of the most diverse countries in the world because people from all over the world live in London. If we didn't travel, we wouldn't get to see amazing places around the world. So I would say, yes, travel. If you want to have a holiday, have a holiday. If you want to go abroad, go abroad. But I would say if you can travel once a year, you know, if you travel three times a year abroad, can you make it twice? Can you make it once a year? When you fly, and I have flown, I flew to my weather summit, I offset my flight. Whether that is even a thing, I don't know, but I offset my flight so that I felt that my travel was justified. And actually, you have to think about the travel you're doing and if it's worth it. We went to Svalbard, it's in the Arctic, like I said, to report on climate change. And people were saying, well, can't you just speak to scientists? Can't you just find out about it here? Do you have to travel all the way there to write a report? And me and my producer and a cameraman, we had a big discussion about whether we really needed to go, and we decided that we did. Oh my goodness, it literally was life-changing. I know the science. I know that glaciers are retreating. I know that the earth is warming. I know that this is bad. I know landscapes are changing. But when I saw it with my own eyes and I felt it with my heart talking to the people that live there, I suddenly realized the reality of my science. I talk about the numbers, I talk about this, but I hadn't really ever felt it. It was the first time I did. And we realized that the positive impact we had from the coverage we did, from the stories we did, so many people came up to me in the street and said, I watched this, or my school watched this, and we've made changes in our lives, was far outweighed by the negative impact we had on the planet. So I think it's just realizing, you know, the benefits, pros and cons.
In your book, Everyday Ways to Save Our Planet,
yes,
there's one fact that really stood out to
okay.
me, and it's because it scared me. And I think that is the crazy thing with this global crisis, is the more information you have, the more scary it is, and the more I personally want to make some changes.
Yeah.
We eat a credit card size amount of plastic per week.
Every week.
Please expand on that, because I don't know how that's going to work out for not only my insides, but the insides of our future generations, because that does not sound good.
No, and it's microplastics. So every time you drink water, there is a chance that there could be small microplastics in it. Also, sometimes people buy single-use plastic water bottles, and then they'll say, oh, don't worry, I'll reuse it. But if you keep reusing those water bottles, they get plastic in them, so you're actually drinking plastic. But then anytime you eat fish or meat, there's a good chance that that will have plastic in it, because of what it eats and drinks. So fish in the ocean is an obvious one. There are tons and tons and tons and tons of plastic being dumped into the oceans every single day. It breaks down, the fish eat it, and we eat the fish. And then with our wildlife that we have, again, it's the water that they eat, or even the ground that they're eating from that has microplastics in it from all of the waste that we discard into the rivers and the streams.
It's terrifying.
It really is.
I actually don't even know what to say to it, because it feels like we are in a situation where we are just surrounded by consuming all of those things. Like, unless you really, it seems like unless you go out of your way, we are just consuming, but constantly consuming.
That is everything. That's the problem with us as a Western, you know, world, buying more stuff than we need, buying more clothes than we need, buying more toys than we need, buying more food than we need, wasting money on those things and throw them away. You're wasting your own money. You don't appreciate the value for things. And also that is adding emissions to our planet. So actually everything, if you could just buy less of everything, it would be better for your wallet, be better for the planet, and you have a better appreciation for things as well.
How do you stay positive though?
Because I've seen amazing people doing amazing things.
Right, so it's holding on to that.
Yeah, there's some people, I went to a thing called the Ashton Awards, so it's like the Pride of Britain Awards, but for the environment, people doing amazing things. There's people across the country who are upscaling people who are out of employment to retrofit houses to insulate them. Insulating your homes will reduce your bills, it reduces your emissions, it saves your money, and it saves the planet. And it also upskills people. When you're going to need to have fewer gas boilers fitted and more air source heat pumps fitted, we need to have more insulation. You lose, I think it's 10 or 15% of your heat through your windows, 10 or 15% through your ceilings, and then the same through your doors. So if you can make them better insulated, and if you spend some money on them, yes, but by the time you spend that money, in a year's time, you've already saved the money on your energy bills. There's people who are putting single solar panels and wind turbines right across Africa to make sure, rather than having oil or gas powering these small villages, they have their renewable energy. And it means that they have electricity and the internet. We don't even realize how lucky we are to be on the grid in those things. These countries have rolling blackouts if they're lucky enough to have electricity. And if they aren't, they can't run their phones, which means if they have a business, they can't sell their products. So actually, by people being across Africa on the grid, having electricity, having the internet, powering their phones, they can run businesses, they can make money, and they can provide for themselves. And then they don't need the hands out from the Western world, because they can build and upscale their own industry. So there's great people doing amazing things.
Laura, you are so informed. It's so cool to chat to you. Does your interest and intrigue for self-development come from a place of competitiveness?
It does. Do you know what? So I have a twin brother. He's called Mark. And I have always been super competitive with him. Never forced upon us by our parents. It was just something that's been inherent in us. You know, who could swim 5 meters first, 25 meters first? What A levels did you get? What GCSEs did you get? How much do you earn? We've always had this something and someone pushing us on to strive and excel and be the best. I was telling my daughter, because we watched Aladdin at the weekend, how I was the princess in the school production of Aladdin, and my brother was initially cast as Aladdin because we were both those kids, yeah, wanted to be in everything. And of course, we can't be the prince and the princess and kiss, because that would be weird.
A little bit odd.
He ended up being Jafar, and I was a princess, and another boy was Aladdin. But we were always those kids that wanted to be, you know, I just always wanted to volunteer to help. You know, we need a rep for this, I'll do it. We need a head of year, this. We need someone at university to be head of...
Were you head girl?
Yes.
Were you?
Yes.
No way.
I was that person. I was the first year rep. I was the physics, meteorology and maths rep at university. Even though I didn't do maths, I started being the maths rep. When I first joined ITV, I joined the ITV team to help to coordinate people's communications and how we can make things better. So I'm a Beaver leader, like I said, for my daughter, because I want the Beaver leaders group was going to close if her mum didn't help to volunteer. So I said I'd put myself forward. I just like to help. I just like to do stuff. I like to be involved.
You're a doer?
Yeah.
On every level?
Like, it's really important to just try your hardest at everything. And if you can be the best, like, you know, I ran cross country for school. I was the unbeaten girls cross country champion. Like, me and my brother are the most competitive people you will meet, because I just think it's really important to want to be the best and try your hardest.
Okay.
And that's what I try and teach my daughter as well. Well,
let's go to competition then. So far on this season, we've had Gabby Logan on.
Yeah.
And without a doubt, she's definitely walked me the furthest.
Oh no!
Out of all 90
odd episodes. How far have we walked?
We've actually done over 2 miles.
Okay.
So we're doing pretty good.
How far did she take you?
She did 4 kilometres. So we did about 2.7 miles with her.
Okay.
So we're not far off.
Okay, come on, let's pick up the pace. So
the competitiveness translates into work, but does it also affect you in social occasions when it comes to nights out, for example? Because we met first time, I think it was at a snow dome. You were forecasting.
Oh, yes.
And I was with the Beeb, you were with ITV. But then we did meet at a festival.
Yes.
So when it comes to nights out and dancing and being the last one standing, does that competitive edge flare up there as well?
I just like to live life to the fullest. So when we have a night out at work, I'll always say, I'll get a little nap before I go to hair and makeup. We're lucky enough to have that. Boy, do I need it. But usually I'll go somewhere and find somebody and chat, you know, I like to chat.
Love a little chat.
And then, you know, usually a red carpet's about 5. So you go into hair and makeup about 2 and you're finished about 4. You have to get there. And then the event happens and you have your dinner and then there's the awards. And I just think I'm a FOMO. I hate missing out.
Yeah.
I think I want to speak to those people. I want to have that drink. I want to stay for the disco. So I just stay up until probably midnight and... depending on which boss or my mum's listening. And I'll try and say to myself, 4 hours sleep is enough and you can go home and you can sleep and you can make up that sleep. So I think there's just, whether it's the competitive side of me or not liking to miss out on anything, I just want to do everything and experience everything and enjoy everything. I feel like I haven't missed out.
I feel like it's passion for life.
Yeah.
I'd give it that.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Take off the competitive edge. A friendly passion for life. I'm definitely going to take that into my next night out.
No, I love Bon Jovi and he says, live while you're alive, sleep while you're dead.
Boom, you heard it here. I've heard though from this particular source that I have that
you're Ben Shepherd again.
You have a tendency to sound like Barry White in the morning. However, you're pretty good at still smashing out the Met forecast. And the terminology was smashing it out.
That has been known to happen on occasion. And my mum always says, you just have to be careful. You don't look really unprofessional and you sound terrible. But whenever I have a late night, probably because of drinking and singing, it ruins my vocal cords. So when I wake up in the morning, I often have no voice. And by the time I get to work, my voice is like this. And I come in and I'll say to the team, morning. And they're like, what? Or maybe the occasional person will be like, can you say something? What do you want me to say? And they're like, oh yeah, I love it. So yeah, my voice is really low.
And it's slowly gets higher and sexual voice.
And so at the end of my weather forecast, it always says, to find out more about the weather where you are, head to itv.com/weather. They made me record one with my Barry White voice. So they
go on, every let's time hear I come it, in, let's go, hear it.
To find out more about the weather where you are, head to itv.com/weather. It's even lower than that. And they love just playing that when it's like Laura's hungover and they play it. There's one time, there was this ultimate news quiz. So there's like, it's a massive thing at a big venue, I can't remember where it is. And there must be about 50 or 60 tables. ITV, ITV News, Good Morning Britain, BBC News, Sky, all different companies. And I think there's 10 people in the team. 2 years ago, we won the ultimate news quiz. My boss,
go on.
I was like, okay, I'm gonna go home, really good. I'm gonna not stay up too late. No, we won, drank loads. I woke up, because my phone was on silent, obviously, because you're doing a quiz, you're not allowed to make phone calls, etc. You wanna win legitimately, as I do as a competitive person. I had my phone on silent and I was staying in town and I hadn't set my alarm because I just literally passed out on the bed in all my clothes. And then my boss was trying to phone my phone, but it was on silent. She was phoning the hotel and they wouldn't let her phone the room for security reasons or whatever. And in the end, after lots and lots and lots and lots of phoning, they eventually got home through to the taxi driver who went inside, asked them to call up to me. I just answered the phone with a swear word because I looked at my phone and it was 6 o'clock.
No!
Show starts at 6.
No! No! I feel like we shouldn't be vocalising this on the podcast.
I turned up at Good Morning Britain at 6:30. Charlotte had already read my first weather forecast for me. I had to phone in and tell them what I was going to say, even though I didn't really know. And I turned up with like half hair and makeup done. The makeup ladies had to just kind of go, that will do. And then I went on air, but I had to turn up because I had the trophy. So work weren't cross because I turned up
with a
barely,
trophy.
Little worse for wear, but we'd won, had a trophy.
Unreal.
And Barry Whitevoice.
What a vibe. Sounds like a good crew to work for.
They're great. This year, I wasn't on the team, and FYI, we didn't win. So
there you go.
You know.
But you were in the studio, so yeah. It was their fault.
Exactly.
They got the weather forecast, right? Laura, I got to ask you, what is your relationship like with Monday?
Monday?
Yeah.
Monday is the day that I'm most tired of the week because...
That's odd.
A Sunday night is the hardest night to go to sleep early. So that is our life. Our life, when you're a shift worker or you do crazy patterns, is figuring out your sleep. And every night when you go have to get up early, you go, I'm going to go to bed at a decent hour. I'm going to have a little wind down. I'm going to fall asleep. And then I get up and you go to work early and you potter on with your day. On a Sunday night, it is impossible to go to bed really early because you've got to put a normal time, not 4 a.m.
Yeah.
So Sunday night, after a few years, you realise, don't beat yourself up. You sleep when you sleep. But it means that on a Monday, you've had the least sleep you're probably going to have of the entire week. So in technically, you might think Friday would be your day that you're most tired, but it is likely to be Monday.
How interesting. I did notice last night was Sunday night, that you were posting about various flood and weather concerns. And I said, wow, she's awake pretty late. Someone.
That's because I put the little one down, I do my work emails, I have my shower, get my clothes ready for today. And then I can finally sit down and do those last bits of admin. So that's my sort of end of the day.
Sunday
roundup.
Night admin.
Yes.
So we don't like a Monday morning.
I know, it's not that I don't like a Monday morning, but later on Monday, I'll be tired.
You're in Stroud City later.
But Monday especially is ballet night.
Especially as now we are currently on 2.4.2 miles.
We're getting close.
However, we do have one last question. We like to ask every guest on this podcast to leave us with a little life motto or takeaway that they can share with our listeners to set them up for the week ahead.
Okay.
It can be anything.
I need to think about this one.
It could be anything. Or a life motto quote that you live by, that you want to share with Alice. You live by a lot. I've just heard it.
I'm trying to think about it. Do you know, I just like being happy and I like being nice to people and I like helping people wherever I can and being selfless. Yesterday, for the first time, I watched The Greatest Showman. And my daughter had told me about it because she's six and she'd watched a little video, one of the clips and one of the songs, and she was asking about it. And if you haven't watched The Greatest Showman, it's kind of about adversity in the class system where very affluent people really look down on people who are just regular working class. And Hugh Jackman has a circus of people who are seen as freaks because there's a woman who has a beard and there's a small man and there's guys with all these tattoos. And my daughter was asking me all these questions about why people didn't like each other. Why couldn't Zac Efron go out with the girl? Why did he let go of her hand? And I said, well, his family see that he's really rich. He see her as the girl being really poor and his family don't think that she's good enough. And I said, but she's nice. And they're not nice. I said, it doesn't matter how much money you have. The most important thing is you need to be nice. And she said, she thought about it. And about 10 minutes later, she came on and she went, Mummy, it doesn't matter if you are old or young, if you are black or white, or if you're rich or poor. The most important thing is that you're nice.
That is so mega. For you as a mum, that must have made your day.
Yeah, I cried and I hugged her and she asked if they were happy tears or sad tears that I couldn't figure out. But with everything, you know, in the world of climate change, and you look at the adversity affecting the people who are least responsible for climate change, are the ones most impacted. If everybody could help them more, they'll be better off. I want my daughter to grow up in a world where everybody is kind and everybody can help each other. And in helping each other, you get reward for yourself. Sometimes when she helps somebody, the other day she had some yo-yo bears. She too really wanted both of them, but her friend really wanted one and she shared one with a friend. And then later on when she saw a friend, he had a cookie and she looked at this cookie and the boy said, do you want me to share my cookie? And he shared his cookie and I said to her, look, you shared with your friend and he shared with you. How did it make you feel? And it made her think about being kind and nice to others. So I just think, be kind, be nice, think about other people and not yourself.
You're on. Laura Tobin, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. For those of you that have subscribed to the audio, you know what to do. Make sure you check back every single Monday from the early hours. We drop this podcast at 12 a.m. for those early just like you. You can listen on your commute.
That'd be the first thing I do. I always have a nice little mantra now that the sun is shining, is that the sun is always shining above the clouds.
Yes, Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap.